Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again to Circles of Change. It's a real pleasure here at the top of the hour to call across the country to the East Coast and welcome Michelle Letterman to the show. How are you this morning, Michelle?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, it couldn't be better. 300 shows in the kitty now, so thanks again.
That's exhausting.
It is. It does, but it's a lot of fun. Let me introduce Michelle. She's author of the new book, The 11 Laws of Likeability. In fact, right across the top it says Relationship Networking, because people do business with people they like. She also is founder of Executive Essentials, a training company that provides communication and leadership programs as well as executive coaching services. Michelle truly believes that real relationships lead to real results and specializes thus in teaching people how to communicate with confidence, clarity, and connection. She's delivered seminars internationally for Fortune 500 companies, universities, high schools, and nonprofit organizations. Michelle actually spent 10 years in finance, beginning her career as a CPA, God bless you, in Arthur Andersen's audit practice, later joining Prime Media as a mergers and acquisition analyst. Her experiences thus range from venture capital to hedge funds, includes being a financial strategist, a hedge fund investor advisor, and then also director of communications at an alternative asset risk management firm. And on the other side of her life, a mother of two young sons and wife, Michelle is also involved in extensive volunteer and community advocacy. She's developed a youth curriculum called Leadership Essentials, which provides workshops and assembly programs. So all well-rounded, and I'm sure a lot of things jumping your way, right, Michelle?
It's been a little busy.
And I'm sure this is kind of pathologically how you're wired to go, right?
It's funny, I was talking to another mom this morning, and I just said, we have monkey brains. They just, even when we sleep, they don't turn off.
They don't turn off. And I think most women are accused of that anyways, but for those of us that fire in so many cylinders at the same time, that's certainly the case. Well, tell us, how has your new book been received, The 11 Laws of Likeability?
I'm just absolutely thrilled with the feedback I've gotten on the book, and the reviews have been great. And what I love is that all different types of people
yes.
are finding their piece of value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my goal, is there isn't one right way to do anything. There isn't one right way to be. It's kind of connecting to your way of doing something and recognizing that that's the right way for you.
Yeah, isn't that true? Maybe we could help, as always, we should define our terms before we get rolling too far fast. The term likability, what do you mean by that?
You know, I'm glad we actually stopped and rolled back for a moment, because I want people to realize that this book is not how to get people to like me.
Okay.
Absolutely, that's not what this book is. And I say right away, not everybody's going to like you, and I can guarantee you not everybody likes me. but this book is about understanding the drivers of likability, what makes us attractive. And I'm not talking about physical attraction, but I'm talking about relationship. You know, when you say you click, what makes that relationship stick? And what are the things that we do and that we perceive in others that make that connection? So this really is truly about building relationships and understanding the levers that we can pull to enable that.
Well, you know, and I think many people, of course, in this day and age of thinking that the best way to connect with people is to friend them through social media and the like, that, you know, that's, to me, really the junk food of relationship building. It is not true nutrition. But rather, it's one necessary step, right? At least it gets, instead of viscerally changing the business cards like we certainly did in previous days, but that doesn't mean you really understand one another's perspectives on things.
I love that analogy. I have to tell you, I've never heard it, and I love it. And we all need a little junk food in our lives. So.
That's true, Sam. That's right.
And I have to admit, to my junk food, I just connected to you on LinkedIn. So
very good. Yes, that's exactly right. We're there.
You know, I think you actually can use social media effectively to build relationships. If all you're doing is clicking like or clicking friend or connecting and then taking it no further, then I agree with you, it's just the junk food. It's filler. It's, oh, look how many people I have in my network.
Right.
But they aren't really in your network. And so what I would say is, if you're going to use social media, use it. Comment. when somebody sends me an invitation for LinkedIn, if I don't think that they know me immediately with my name, I'll send a personal note of how I know them. If somebody links into me, I'll reply saying, thanks so much for reaching out. Great to hear from you. How are you? If I know them, if I don't know them, I might ask, how do we know each other?
Right.
I will not accept an invitation if I don't know how I know you. If you come to one of my talks and you say I was at your talk, I will accept.
But well, you know, you started up by saying really in your network. So for you, Michelle, what does that mean when somebody really is in your network? Is it something that, you know, you might subconsciously have a checklist for, or is it as a result of doing something together?
That's an interesting question. And I don't know if I've defined it in my own head, but let's see if I can try right now. I would think that I have, 800, 900 connections on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I can usually, and I can't say 100% of the time, but I can 99, 95% of the time figure out exactly how I know them. And when I know that connection, then there's something bonding us. So if they reach out to me, I will respond. If somebody's not really in your network, you're not going to respond to them. If they ask something of you, you might not say yes because you're not really sure who they are.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody reaches out to me and says, can you make an introduction for me? And I know them, they're really, as we put it, in my network, I'm happy to do that because you're putting your name to them. If I don't know them that well, I will then seek to know them better, a connection that makes sense, or I make that connection a little bit differently so that I'm establishing how I know the person.
I think you're right, though. This idea of really in your network almost could come back to the point of, would you be willing or are you able, based on knowing them well enough, to give them a referral? And,
yeah.
You know, and that you trust them, they trust you, and you can speak on behalf of them, because at the end of the day, it's really about your reputation you're putting on the line to whomever is requesting information.
Completely true. And that's why I say I might make that introduction differently. If you find something, so a lot of my network is very personal. I sometimes blur the lines between client and friend. And so I might say to somebody, you know what, I love her, we've done this together, and she's really responsible as a class parent, and she's got great energy. I don't know how she works as a graphic designer, but I think you should meet her. And
right.
That's what I know of her, and that's what I can attest to.
You know, there are people, though, that I'm starting to hear this popular buzz that almost networking has taken on, a less than prominent place because it's viewed upon almost like speed dating. How many times I click and connect,
mm-hmm.
or how many times I go to an event with the sole purpose of making sure I hand out 50 business cards, as opposed to going to an event with no business cards. And maybe the goal should be to walk away with 5 assignments where you're going to help somebody else.
Oh, I love that. And that's chapter 10, the law of giving.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I always say to look for in a conversation. There's two things. Before you end the conversation, think about your next point of contact and what you might be able to do to add value to them and add value to the relationship. Because when you give value, when you give, that person wants to stay connected to you, and then it has the opportunity to grow. My analogy is always with a plant. You got to talk to the plant. You got to water the plant. You got to nurture the plant. You got to give the plant a little sunlight, a little room. You can't talk to it and water it endlessly, because then it's going to die on you anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So, Michelle, the years that you've been helping others and your own career progression and so on, how was it really the background? How did you come up with these 11 laws?
It's a great question. I actually had a course that I did for the Museum of Modern Art, and it was called The Natural Networker. And at that time, I had 7 or 8 laws. And it was really just a course I put together as I thought about these aspects. And I like alliteration. I'm going to be completely honest. I love alliteration. And I thought 11 laws sounds great.
Yep, it does. It's a mouthful.
And I started to think about what else drives these things. And I came up with 13. So there's a couple sub-laws in there because I wanted to get it back down to 11. And I really break the book into 3 parts. And the first part is before a conversation even begins. Before you walk into that room, before you pick up that phone, before you go to the meeting, what's happening with you to get you in the right mindset, your energy, your self-image, staying in touch with your authenticity, and, of course, being aware of the perceptions that you're putting out there. The middle part of the book is the conversation itself. So how do you start it? How do you keep it going? How do you find connection within it? How do you leave them feeling good and wanting to stay connected? And then the last part, which I find the most critical, because we can all have that conversation. But then it ends there. It ends with your 50 business cards, and I can tell you, I got a stack of those on my desk, and I get through some of them, but you don't get through them all. I'd rather somebody go and leave with three or four with notes on the back, as you said, of what's the follow-up.
In fact, I've got a fun partner also from your part of the world, Judy Rosemarin from New York City, and she always asks, so what was your hum away? Meaning that when you walk away from a great musical, you know, you're always humming at least one of the tunes. And so have you ever thought when you walk away from someone or they walk away from you or post a meeting, are they walking away humming what you wanted them to hum?
That's fascinating. You've got some great analogies.
Well, you and I play in the same space, and I think what happens many times is people get stuck almost in what the middle of your book is about, and that is, how do I start the conversation, get it going, stay with it, feel like we've had a great engagement, whether that be in a meeting, a networking event, someone you bump into at the grocery store or in the airport. But it all presupposes that you got your own mental act together before you even started. So I think your idea of the laws that precede the actual conversation, perhaps it'd be worthwhile for our listeners, Michelle, if you could spend a little time on those first four.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to let people know the third part, before I jump back to the first, is that follow-up.
Yeah.
It's that converting that conversation into an actual connection.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, let's start at the beginning. And the fundamental foundation of likability is the law of authenticity. And originally, this was the last chapter of the book, and I kept talking about how everything has to be through this lens of authenticity. And I said, well, why is it at the back? I should be at the beginning. And I thought, well, that makes sense.
Because you have to start with knowing yourself well.
Yeah. Self-awareness is the foundation of emotional intelligence. It's the foundation of leadership. It's the foundation of everything. And it's not to say that we believe that we're perfect, but it's understanding our quirks, our flaws, and instead of calling them flaws, maybe we call them unique charms.
That's exactly right.
And it's not that we accept ourselves blindly, and I'm very clear on this. I want people to be who they are. However, if you're in a bad mood, that doesn't give you the right to be nasty. You have to take your authenticity through a lens of interaction. And if you are not in that right mindset, and another piece that I really focus on is energy. In chapter four, this is sometimes the chapter I get the most feedback on in terms of relating.
Mm-hmm, right. Well, that's what people don't understand, that what they're putting out is what they're going to get back. So if you aren't in, whether that mean well-rested, you know, at ease, that you can't do an Oscar-winning performance for all that long and not have that sneak out.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you're not in the mood, I usually give people permission to not go, to not have the conversation, because if you don't feel like it, it's not going to work for you. And I talk about the idea of there's get-tos, want-tos, have-tos, and shoulds in the world. And if you can move your have-tos into the get-to or want-tos, you can delete the shoulds. The shoulds are all in your mind. I should, I should, I should. You're imposing that on yourself. And that's, your energy is not aligned with what the should is. If you can't transfer to a get-to or want-to, you don't have to. If it is a have-to, well, then you have to. So we have to find that way to transfer it to a get-to or a want-to. And I even tell people, fake yourself out. Fake yourself out. I coached this woman once, and we're having this great meeting. She was kind of a guidance counselor or a career counselor at NYU. And towards the end of the meeting, she starts getting, like, a little tense and the expression's changing, and I'm thinking, what did I do? And I asked her, I said, is everything okay? You seem, you know, bothered by something. And she said, oh, I've got this student coming in. I can't stand them and this and that. And I said, you know what? Let me try something with you. You want to play a game? And she's like, sure. So I said, think about a student that you love working with. Tell me about that.
Exactly, yeah.
And she starts telling me about the student she helped, and they got a job, and she came back and said thank you, and all this great energy came out of her. I said, okay, keep thinking about that student till the moment that other student walks in the door. Greet them as if it was that student. See what happens. And I got a call, I think, within 2 hours of leaving that woman's office saying, oh, my God, that was so cool. That was so great. It went completely differently than it typically goes. The student usually was like, no, no, no to everything she suggested. And because the energy she was putting out when this person walked in was already in that negative state of mind, the person was feeling defensive.
Right, and instead we all like performing better around people that are positive, upbeat, or in a place of openness. And in fact, for our listeners, again, just to, in case you just tuned in, we're speaking with Michelle Lederman. Her book is The 11 Laws of Likeability. And while this focuses a lot on relationship networking, keep in mind that these tips and tricks and reminders work equally well with those we interact with on a day-in and day-out basis, whether that be our spouse, our kids, or those we have that we interact with so often at work.
Yes, and thank you for including our personal relationships, because to some extent I don't differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
And when people read the book, they'll see there's personal stories and business stories, and when you aren't building relationships, they kind of traverse between those parts of our lives. Those are the best relationships.
You know, for a lot of people, though, this whole idea of whether you call it networking or relationship building, they might come back to us and say, but look, I'm fundamentally an introvert. I'm not comfortable around strangers. Or, oh, my gosh, I've got to go to this a social event, and mm-hmm. I just as soon actually just go step out and stand on the balcony the whole time. Your advice and wisdom, and how could they use this book to empower themselves to be more comfortable with their own skin and indeed have to deal in those kind of situations?
Well, I have actually a section of the book called Good News for the Introverts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I was actually excited when I got an Amazon review from an extrovert saying, this is great for extroverts too.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I do find that I talk a lot more to introverts who seek this type of assistance help. And the thing is, introverts are naturally good at networking. They have some certain skills that extroverts don't have that are really to their advantage, and they should be aware that their skill of listening.
Yes, right.
And their skill of preference of being in a one-on-one is actually far better than what the extrovert prefers, which is, you know, maybe talking with a whole crowd and doing more of the talking and less of the listening.
Mm-hmm.
So good news. Great. You don't want to be the center of attention. You don't have to be. Here's some ideas for the introvert. Get there early. And I know you're like, no, I can't blend in. But when you can't blend in, nobody else can either, and they're also looking for somebody to talk to. And so they might approach you and make it easier for you. There's fewer people there, and you can have your one-on-ones. You can also stay late.
Mm-hmm.
Same impact. You can work the desk. Everyone has to stop and talk to you at the desk. And so you now have a reason and a set thing to talk to them about when you're working the desk or you're a greeter. If you find somebody else that you see kind of on the outskirts or on the balcony, go talk to them. And you can even talk about how it's a little bit too crowded, a little bit too much, and you can find just your one or two people. If you leave an event with one person that you really want to follow up with, it was worthwhile. You don't need 10.
Well, and in fact, to your point, then many times those are the individuals that walk away with a much richer feeling for having contributed to and been part of the event, as opposed to those that are the honeybees buzzing around and just superficially collecting business cards or hitting LinkedIn connects or Facebook connects without the substance behind it.
And that's not to say that those that really, the extroverts that love to talk and be out there and honeybees, that's not to say they can't do the same thing.
Correct,
they
right.
just have to follow through on it. And what I would say to those, and I used to be one of those that might have done way too much talking, is just to do a little bit more listening and a little bit more questioning. When I talk about that middle section of the book, I always say start with curiosity. And when you start with authentic curiosity, that conversation grows naturally.
The other thing that happens is actually the conversation then is more memorable. So when you leave the event, probably what you're going to remember are those that where someone told them about an interesting trip that they took,
mm-hmm.
or a new tool that they bumped into that even though they were viewed as a financial planner using, you know, very digestible things that they might have discovered something over here in the wildlife management process. And again, based on your conversation with the individual, that's probably what you're going to remember.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've actually gotten jobs because I've talked about poetry or animal rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And before I left the office, they somehow, I don't know how they did it either. This was when I graduated from undergrad. They had a letter waiting for me to give me the offer. And I tell you, I spent the entire time talking about poetry.
Well, and you know, that's why it's interesting you should mention that, is that how many career shifters I find that they come to you with your resume and they don't have anything in the section, avocation, public service, community service, you know, like mm-hmm. you certainly are dedicated to. And actually, that's where the networking starters are richly embedded, is in the perceived, quote, all other.
Yes. I always had, and it's been controversial. I do watch and look at some of the posts that people put about this, mm-hmm. and there are definitely two camps to this, but I always vote for put in an additional section. That additional section might be volunteer work, might be just hobbies and interests. It could be I actually put things like, I had won some awards for poetry. I have done a lot of animal rescue work. I had sports that I liked. So sometimes we talk about skiing or water skiing. I put that I've been to 55 countries. And so we start talking about travel. That's where you get into fun conversations. Your personality comes out. People always get to the things they need to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to enjoy getting to things they want to get to.
Which is exactly, like you said, the idea of conversation when you're in, whether it be a cocktail setting or a business setting, to have those kind of warm-ups that really, again, endear people to you.
Yeah, I always say you want to make three shifts. And we want to shift from it's about me.
Right.
And often early in the career we think, you know, I'm doing this because I need something, to it's about the relationship. We want to shift from it's a short term, it's a I need this now, to it's a long term, you know, we want to keep you in my network and support each other for long term. And the third thing is a shift from it's about work and professional to it's about anything. And that's where the true connections come.
I would also say that, you know, back to your point about that connecting with relationships not being about us truly is about giving and giving and giving. And lo and behold, before you know it, you're going to be receiving multifold, not necessarily from the person that you first passed the baton to, mm-hmm. but it eventually makes its way back to you, doesn't it?
I truly believe that. And, you know, people ask how I started this book. Yes, it came from a course, but the truth is this is how I live my life. People ask me the question of how did I build my business? And this is how. I seek to give and give first and give often, and sometimes I have been in the position of being given to and look and how can I give back and I have nothing to give. And I tell this story about this woman who it took me 5 years, but I finally was able to give. And people won't forget you. But what I told this woman, I ran into her and I still felt like I never gave back. And I said, I just wrote about you. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, it was because of you, you sitting with me that first time when I wanted to start my own business, that I've sat with over 100 entrepreneurs wanting to start theirs.
And in fact, that's the best way you could thank her is to do it for others, isn't it?
Exactly. And she was just blown away. She's like, really? I did that?
Very good. Well, Michelle Lederman, thank you so much for joining us. Her new book is The 11 Laws of Likeability, Relationship Networking, because people do business with people they like. You can learn about Michelle's organization by going to executiveessentials.org, as well as michelletillislederman.com. Thanks so much for joining us here today, Michelle. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thanks, Sarah.
You bet.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.